I'd like to welcome everybody to the meeting tonight. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Debbie.
Hey, Debbie.
Welcome to Simple Actions. For those who care to join us, let's start the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. All right, the Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step or steps discussed tonight, because tonight we are doing the second week of steps 8 and 9. And let's read those steps. So we've got step 8 is made a list of all persons we have harmed and came willing to make amends to them all. And 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And we, at this group, we read a couple of paragraphs out of the big book pertaining to those steps, and we have a panel of speakers share their experience on the paragraphs as we read them. And tonight we have Katie and Iran, so let's welcome our panel. All right. So let's see where we're starting here. Looks like page 80. So we talked about this last week, and so we're like continuing on. The chances are that we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we are mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around in the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he's having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he is married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. And I didn't ask, Katie, would you like to go first?
Sure.
Yay.
My name's Katie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Katie.
I'd like to thank the group and David for asking me to be here tonight. It's always an honor and a privilege to be asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is an awesome meeting, and so I'm always happy when I get an opportunity to be a part of it. A couple of things about me. I have a sobriety date. That's an important thing to have when you're in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's April 14th, 2003. I am home group. It's the Growth and Maintenance Group in Williamsburg. We meet at 7 o'clock on Friday nights. Really good group from people all over the community. Lots of honest sharing that goes on there. I have a sponsor. I sponsor the women, and I'm active in service, currently serving as the ADCM for District 38. And I don't say all that stuff to tell you how great I am or shiny or special, but those are the things that I do on a daily basis to stay sober. I'm not entirely sure which one of those is the best, but I'm not all that willing to find out. And so just so you know a little bit about me and you know, how I ended up here, which is really simple. David asked me.
Yes.
And I looked at this today and kind of chuckled because at first, this first paragraph, I was like, I don't have anything to say on that. And I'm looking at the book that I worked the steps out of when I first got sober, and I don't have much written next to this other than I was mixed up with men in a fashion that I wouldn't have cared to be advertised. But as we were reading through it, a couple of things jumped out to me. You know, having domestic problems. I certainly had those. I was 17 years old when I got sober. I was still living with my parents' house. I had a lot of domestic problems. They weren't exactly this type of domestic problem. They were of another sort. But, you know, at bottom, I don't know how to live with people. You know, I don't know how to be one among many or a functioning part of a family unit. And that was definitely clear when I got here. And the things that it talks about, you know, family getting worn out, resentful and uncommunicative. That was absolutely my experience. Me feeling lonely and sorry for myself. That was just pervasive. That was like my everyday state of being, lonely and sorry for myself. And I did. I looked around for anyone and anything that would make me feel better. Alcohol, things that produce the same effect in me as alcohol, and people. I use people the way that, you know, I use alcohol. Make me feel better about me. What can you do for me? Always looking to take and never what I could give. And, you know, I did. I also had the other kind of domestic troubles where, you know, the people that I would date, you know, I would find other people who understood where I was coming from and just really got me in that moment, you know. And so then I would have to deal with the fallout from that stuff. You know, and I did. I felt really bad about that, about all those things. I remember having friends whose parents would drink with us and thinking, like, why can't my parents be like that? You know, here they are, like, doing everything they can to help me, and I'm wishing that I had parents that, you know, were different. And, you know, and I think I just didn't know how to be in a family, and I didn't know how to deal with those emotions. And like everything else, I just set about trying to make myself feel better, and it didn't work out very well. But one thing that I also was reminded of as we read this, which is, you know, maybe we have these problems, and that sentence, we doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. Even if drinking complicates these relationships for us, they're hard, period, alcoholic or not. And one of the things I'm really grateful for is having a sponsor who will remind me of that. You know, every time I call her with a situation or a problem that I'm facing, whether it's, you know, a professional relationship or a domestic relationship, it's usually a relationship that, you know, starts the ball rolling, although I'm perfectly capable of getting all kinds of crazy by myself on my couch. but when I call her and I talked about her about those things, she's really good at saying, like, you know, that is not, like, yes, you're an alcoholic and you're probably making more of this than you need to, but that's a human problem, you know, mm-hmm. And on these domestic relationships, telling me that, you know, apart from the survival instinct, the instinct to be in domestic relationships of whatever sort is one of the strongest ones that we as human beings have. And so it's pretty natural that we would struggle with that, and when our instincts get out of proportion and run amok, that they cause problems in that area, because it's such an important area, alcoholic or not. And so I appreciate being reminded of that, because I can fall into the trap of thinking I'm just a sick alcoholic and everything is because I drank and I'm so different than the other normal people out there. And having a sponsor that will tell me that helps me actually relate to the other people in my life, because most of them, you know, when I'm not in these meetings, are not alcoholics. And I'm able to understand and approach them on as one among many, instead of feeling different and special then, which usually gets me into trouble. So I'll pass.
Thank you. My name is Iran. I'm a real alcoholic.
I am.
Hi. Thank you, David, for asking me. Thanks for Simple Actions for letting me sit here. So again, I have those things. My sobriety date is February 27, 2009. My home group is A1. Thank you. And my home group is A101. It meets on Sunday mornings at 11 o'clock in the hospital, Norfolk General Hospital, right up the street. And if we'd love to have you, if you get lost, just listen for my laughter. I'll be there to guide you like a beacon, I hope. I have in the home group, I have a position, and with the inner group, I have a position. And again, just like you, I'm not telling you more that I'm better than or anything. I'm just giving back to the program that saved my life, because when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a problem. I could not stop, and my mind would constantly get me drunk. And the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the actions of Alcoholics Anonymous, the suggestions of people in Alcoholics Anonymous has changed my life completely. So I am grateful for that. So on to what we read. So I was sitting here and I was like, I didn't get mixed up with women. I got mostly mixed up with men. So I was like, I'm out. But see, that's how my brain works immediately, is like, oh, I didn't happen that way, so I'm out. I'm safe, right? But I know today that that's not the truth. So I looked up the definition of the word domestic, and it says relating to the running of a home or to family relations. And my wonderful drinking career was spent single, and most of the time it was spent in random places like bathhouses and crazy stuff, having all the single fun I could have. And so, yes, people hated me because I lied and cheated, but it didn't matter because there was someone right on the corner. And that's how I kind of lived for a long time. But most of there was only one person that when it came to a relationship that I had to consider how much I had hurt them, and that was just someone I had who they asked me if I wanted to be in a relationship, and I never responded to their answer because I figure if I don't respond, then I'm not really in a relationship. even though we were hanging out and, you know, living and doing all the things that a relationship and partners do, I have proceeded to, of course, I have a funny way, especially when it comes to relationships and domestic relationships, when I get what I want, I then no longer want it, no matter how amazing it is for me. And any little thing that I can possibly find, I will find, and I will try to push them away. And I've discovered that in my past, I've discovered it in my present, and I'm sure we'll probably ramp up with a new hat in my future. But what I've discovered is that there's some steps that I can take to work on those things. And with that one person, I discovered also that I wanted to blame them for a lot of things, when the truth was is that I was unwilling to admit the truth, which is that I love them, and I was afraid that if I gave them my complete and utter love, that they would leave me. And I never wanted to be hurt again the way I had been hurt one time like that before. And so I had to look at that particular one when it came to domestic relations with another being that was not family related. Now, with that answer, it took a long time to come to the willingness to be able to do that and to talk with them. And I still have not talked with them. I've sent out information to say, hey, but I've gotten no response, which I'm okay with. But I'm willing to take that action. But the truth really came with domestic relationships with me was with my mother and my grandmother and my brother and my sister. And how I felt entitled, how I felt better than. I am the oldest, and I was raised as a single child, so I felt like I deserved a lot, and I treated my family like crap because I believed that I deserved better than what they were giving me. I deserved better parents. I deserved to be loved better. I deserved better clothes. I deserved better money. I deserved a lot of things that were really not. They were just things that could have been very simply. I could have had none of the things that I was given. I was given a happy home. I was given money. I was given great education. I was pulled, lived in a great neighborhood. We didn't have robbery. We didn't have crime. We didn't have any of those things, but I think I deserved better. And so that's my, that's the truth about my domestic relationships today. If you're my friend, I deserve better. If you're my lover, I deserve better. If you're my family, I deserve better. Because when I get what I really am searching for, which is I really found the truth, I'm looking for people in my life to worship me. and what I really mean is I want you to be like, Iran, you're the almighty, the best. I love you. Love work. I love you. Bow down, Iran. You know, that's what I want to happen. When I get that, I am unhappy. And when I don't get that, I will spend time trying to grab people to make them do that instead of really enjoying what I am. So I did spend time lurking in other nightclubs and stuff, looking for things to make me feel better, to be better, to instead of just being okay with who I am, which I really found the truth of that is untreated alcoholism. Yeah, what? I don't have alcohol in my body, but I'm still searching. I'm searching for something to make me feel better in my life, and I can't ever find that without God and the 12 steps.
Thank you. All right, we're going to continue on page 81. Whatever the situation, we usually have to do something about it. If we are sure our wife does not know, should we tell her? Not always, we think. If she knows in a general way that we've been wild, should we tell her in detail? Undoubtedly, we should admit our fault. She may insist on knowing all the particulars. She will want to know who the woman is and where she is. We feel we ought to say to her that we have no right to involve another person. We are sorry for what we have done, and God willing, it shall not be repeated. More than that, we cannot do. We have no right to go further. Though there may be justifiable exceptions, and though we wish to lay down no rule of any sort, we have often found this the best course to take.
Yeah, so like I said, I did have situations in my drinking. You know, God, I just punish people for loving me. You know, I don't like to really put myself out there and risk, you know, letting somebody new get to know me. So I would just date the same guys over and over, literally like the same two guys over and over again. And I would get bored with one and go to the other and then go back. I'm not proud of that, because what that ended up looking like was like a string of like 2-3 year long relationships, neither of which went particularly well because of my own behavior. And with one of those in particular, I had to face these questions, and I didn't have sponsorship, and I wasn't sober, so I didn't have principles. And even though I had this idea in my mind of like the type of person I was in my head, or who I wanted to be, I was not living up to that image on anything like a consistent basis. And this was certainly another example of that. My sponsor told me when we read this the first time, you don't get to go dump your garbage. And I was a big old garbage truck when I got here. And I was just running around, dumping my garbage on other people's lives. Romantic relationships or not, you know, like, I just need to say it out loud to feel better, you know, and it's all about me. It's all about me and how I'm going to feel as a result of that. And so, you know, I did that. And, you know, that's, for me, that experience is not something I can ever forget. You know, hearing the pain that that caused another human being, even through my own selfishness and my own self-centeredness, like, I felt that, and it left a mark. And it was really difficult. And, you know, thankfully, I haven't had to have one of those conversations in sobriety. But, you know, I have definitely fallen on my face in a lot of other ways in sobriety, where I've had to go and take responsibility and not make excuses and, you know, not needlessly hurt other people or involve other people, you know, and just really stand on my own 2 feet and own who I am, what I've done, and, you know, what I can do to make it right. And that is challenging, which is why, you know, to the extent it hasn't been said yet, I think we both will probably say it more than once tonight, how important the role of a sponsor is in this stuff. Mm-hmm. Both as I go through 8 and 9 the first time, and as I continue to live in 10, 11, and 12 and take that daily inventory and continue to try and set right the mistakes that I make now, because I still make a lot of mistakes. You know, and I love that, you know, a little further on it talks about dealing with that most terrible human emotion, jealousy, and how just really damaging that can be. And that, you know, one of the other things I appreciate about this book is that when it comes to sex and sex relations in the fourth step, and then here again in 8 and 9, there is a lot of, we do not have a one-size-fits-all approach here. You need to do what is best for you in light of your own situation in consultation with your sponsor and your higher power. And that was certainly what I got, you know. I have had sponsors who have told me what to do, but it works a whole lot better for me when I'm honest and I'm willing to answer the questions that they ask and accept responsibility for how I choose to handle situations. Because what's right for me might not be what's right for you, and vice versa. You know, it says that, I think, as far as I can tell, it is the only place in the book that it says, like, you might want to talk to other people about this, but really, your sex relationships are between you and God. Mm-hmm. And that's in step 4, and I see a lot of that here in what we're reading in step 9, and, you know, I see it later on when we talk about in working with others and family feuds and how to help people who have domestic problems, that, you know, we don't know what the right answer is for you. You are the one who has to live with your own decisions and the consequences of those decisions. But here are some principles that might work. And I have found, both for myself and then in sponsoring other people, that that seems to be the best thing. You know, I have the fortune, a good fortune, of working with a few women right now, one of whom has a lot of problems in these areas of her life. And, you know, we have been talking about those same problems for a long time. And, you know, my sponsor showed me through her own patience with me when I had those problems that it's not my job to fix those for her. It is not my job to tell her what to do. It is my job to ask her questions, to tell her what I hear when she gives me the answers. And, you know, remind her of what the book says about how we try to live in that area of our lives. And, you know, whether she continues to do the same thing over and over again like I did or not, that's really not up to me, you know. And that was certainly how I was introduced to this aspect of the program and dealing with the wreckage in my domestic life. So that's all I got on that.
Thank you. Okay. So I just said, you know, follow the instructions. They're clear-cut directions. I don't know what to say about it. Because I'm glad that they were here, because I remember that when I thought I was like making my list, right, and I'm like, okay, I had geared myself up, you know, to make all this stuff right, you know, because I had tricked some people that were close friends of my friends that they were dating to sleep with me. I had, you know, messed up some stuff, you know, and so I was like, okay, I'm ready to do this. I know what to do now, you know, and then it was, I love this line here, because it says we have to do something about this, but not always, we think. What? What do you mean, not always? I thought we had to do something always. But then I love, it's in a chapter called Into Action. I thought we had to do something all the time. But it says, we feel we ought to say to her what that we have no right to involve another person. Oh, crap. So it wasn't like, because, see, my motive in that thought now is now completely going to change. Because first of all, my thing would have been like, yo, Matt, I slept with your friend, your boyfriend, John. I'm making up names in case you know. And just because I remembered it, we're being so, you know, right? And then I'm like, Matt, you know, but it's not, because that could hurt their relationship of any sorts. So now it's all on me. Uh-oh. And my wrong, not anybody else's wrong. And that's kind of the way I went into this list. This whole part is like, I constantly have this attitude that I'm like, I want to feel better, and I'm gonna tell the world I'm a screw up. And then, but the truth is, it's not my right to involve anyone else. It's not my right to bring someone else down with me in my quest for freedom. And so that changed my whole concept of what really I'm here to do. in this 8 and 9 step. You know, I probably didn't do it the first time, but maybe the second time I was reading, it really changed my, because my concept I thought was to be free, but it's no, to live without hurting anyone else if I can. And I was like, oh crap. So now I have to do the right thing, which is really look at the details. Who am I involving in this situation? What am I really, really, truly wrong for? You know, and what's my part? Not what me and their part is, not what me and whatever the situation's part wrong. It's what's my part? Where am I wrong? And I'm wrong for taking our friendship and using it in a way that's absolutely not great for being a friend, and for being sneaky behind your back and doing these things. And it doesn't matter who else was involved. It matters that I'm the one who did that to you. And so that that becomes hard. It becomes hard. But the freedom that comes from that, when I've had the opportunity to do that, has been amazing. And I love this. It says, and though we wish to lay down no rule of any sort, we have often found this is the best course to take. We want to be gentle and tell you that there's really no rule, but trust us, follow it. I love the writing. I love that they keep us, they tell, you know, they Bill and these, the people who were praying over what words to use, really took someone like me into consideration and my easy way to finagle the truth and change it and make it work out better for me, or what I think would be better for me. What I've found to be truth is following these instructions have been 150 billion times better than any idea I've ever come up with. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Rand. Let's see you on page 82 now. If we have no such complication, there's plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is to keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Mm-hmm. Hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead, affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He's like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand? The wind stopped blowing."
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
That, I can still remember the meeting I was in when I heard that paragraph for the first time. I don't know if that's when I read it the first time, but I can remember where I was, the chair I was in, and the way that I felt when I heard that. It was like, oh, my God, they know. You know? Like... Yeah. That's me. I'm a tornado anyway. But on a good day, I like, you know, I'm a tornado out in a big empty field and I'm not causing a lot of damage. When I was drinking, there were not a lot of good days.
Yeah.
You know, I just, and part of it is the way that this is written, but I could look at in my life and I could see broken hearts. I could see dead relationships. I could see uprooted affections. I could see the turmoil that my drinking had wrought. And the longer I stay here, the more I'm able to see that, you know, because when I got here, I was a victim. I didn't really think that I had hurt anybody other than myself. You know, I had a few of those things, but I had good reasons for why I hurt those people.
Right.
And really, they could have nothing to do with the person involved. It's just that a lot of bad things happen to me, and so I'm justified in how I treat other people, regardless of how it affects them. That's really the way that I thought about my life. And, you know, I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous thinking, I'm in trouble. I don't want to be in trouble anymore. Drinking has caused a lot of that trouble, so I'll just not drink for a while. get my life together and then have wine with dinner when I'm 35 like my dad. And it took me, I was probably well into this step before I let go of that idea. and, you know, my sponsor really hammered home to me that when we're talking about amends, yes, I have to go back and mend what I broke. That is certainly a piece of the amends. We've talked a lot about that with the, going back and taking responsibility for what I did. But she said, probably even more important than that is the living amends. That is amending my behavior going forward, changing the way that I treat the people in my life, whether they were there when I was drinking or not. You know, because part of my living amends to the people who aren't in my life anymore is I try to treat the people who have filled those roles differently than I treated them. I try to be better out of, you know, respect for the harm that I have caused. And as far as I'm concerned, that's a debt that I can't ever repay. And, you know, it's funny, as we were talking about the patience of mothers and wives, like, I did not view my mother as being particularly patient because she was trying really hard to get me arrested, and I did not appreciate that. But I look at my parents today, and, you know, they were immensely patient with me. They were willing to have a daughter who hated them for a prolonged period of time because it was the best thing. You know, the things that brought my wrath were the things that ultimately saved my life. And so I didn't recognize that as patience. I viewed that as obstruction, you know, and my perspective changes. You know, I get here and I'm able to see those things today and be grateful for them. And, I just not drinking and going to meetings is not enough for me. Like, this is where it's at, you know, and I had an experience really recently. My grandfather died last month, just about a month ago. And he and his wife, when I was drinking, they threw me out of their home. Because they didn't like the way that I was behaving. They didn't like the way I was treating my parents, and they didn't think that I was being particularly respectful of them. And we were out of state, so like being thrown out of the house is problematic at 16, 17 years old. And I had to go stay with an aunt several miles away, and I wasn't allowed back. And I don't see this stuff working in my life on a daily basis. I don't see the living amends. I don't wake up and go, I gotta do this for living amends. You know, I would make a concerted effort to call them and be in their life. But when he died 13 years after I got sober, we were good. I had a wonderful relationship with him. When I knew he was sick, I got on an airplane and I flew across the country and I saw him a week and a half before he died because that mattered to me. And it wasn't about like, oh, I've got to check the box on having this great living amends. This is just the program working in my life, in me and through me, sometimes in spite of me. And I realized, like, I got to be a granddaughter to him for 13 years. And I wouldn't have known that I was missing that until it was too late. You know, and all the times that I thought, well, I know I don't want to go to a meeting. I don't want to work that step. I don't want to answer the phone when a sponsee calls. All of that. You know, when I did it anyway, allowed me to have that. And that to me now is a priceless gift. And there's no other way that I could get it, you know? And so I look at that and I just think, like, that was so me. I'm such the tornado, but I don't have to live that way anymore if I'm willing to come here and do the work. Thanks.
Thanks.
Sorry.
First of all, I am always twirling, so I'm always a tornado. And but I didn't see myself as that. But the line that hit me just tonight was, to his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?" And that's how I looked at life completely. And it really like hit me tonight. Like, I would be like, I have just ruined houses, stolen from you, lied, cheated, did everything, and I'm like, "Hi, nothing's wrong here. You want to go hang out again? Why don't you? Nothing's wrong." You know, like, that's what I bring to the table. And that the line that popped out again, and that was shockingly treated. I was talking about family. Shockingly, I didn't shockingly treat my family horribly. And then immediately the experience that popped in my head was I was drinking ridiculously. I had just stopped drinking. I hadn't talked to my parents and my grandmother in a year, maybe two. I can't really remember. But I do remember the only time I ever called her was when something was wrong. I needed money. Yeah, that's it. And like that's the only time I ever called her. And I was living in Portland, Oregon at the time, and I decided I was going to come home and kill myself because I was important. So I didn't want my parents to have to fly my body back from Oregon, you know, to here to bury me because I'm that important. And so I took a train back home, and I didn't call my parents. I didn't let my grandmother know that I was coming home. And I took a bunch of pills in Richmond, and I woke up in Hampton. And then in a hospital, and then they took me to the psychological institute over there in Hampton. And I remember I called my mom and see my mom answer the phone from a number she didn't know, which is amazing. Tells you how she lives. You know what I mean? Like a random phone call from Virginia, you know, and she just answers the phone. And she answers the phone, and I go, "Hi, Mom. It's Irene. I'm in a crazy place in Hampton. Can I stay with you when I get out?" See, that's what I bring to the table, you know, and that's what I bring to the table. I mean, my mom, you know, she had already kicked me out, and I was never to live with her again, and she opens her doors, you know, and I walk around for a year without my head held down. I can't lift it up. I don't speak. I mean, she gets the best of me then, you know, and, you know, because I'm, you know, I'm miserable. I have no solution. And I'm unwilling to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm unwilling to take do anything. And I treated her like crap my whole life. This woman took me in. My mother was 16 years old when she had me. My mom gave me to my grandmother the day she walked out of the hospital because my mother she didn't want to mess up her life by having a child. My grandmother raised me as I was her son. My grandmother loved me. She clothed me. She didn't treat me bad. She didn't talk down to me. She loved and cared for me. And I treated her like crap because I wanted something else. She wasn't really my mother. She, you know, she's just my grandmother. Who cares? You know? But this woman gave up her life for me when she could have a different life at that time. This woman gave her heart, her money, her soul, her prayer, her time. Up for me because, you know, I was a model citizen and, you know, I shockingly treated her like crap constantly. I talked down to her. I didn't answer. I lied. I stole from her and she still took me in, you know, and this is what I bring to the table. But of course I don't see nothing's wrong here. Everything's fabulous in Iran land. And then, selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. Constantly. That's what I did. I was completely and utterly selfish and inconsiderate. And I'd lie and I'd play my mom and my grandfather against each other. And I would blame it on my brother and sister when they came to visit. Or it's because, you know, my mother is, that's why I act like this. I think one time, I'll tell you a little story and then I'm going to show. One time, I have problems. God, I was 11 years old, and we were going to go do something, and I went to the bathroom, and I started hanging from the ceiling lamp in the bathroom naked, and I was like making a bunch of noise. My mom comes in the room, and she asked me just a simple question, which would have deserved a simple answer. Her question was, "What made you do that?" And instead of saying, "I don't know," or "I just felt like doing it," or "unsure," I just said, "The devil made me do it." The devil made me do it. And what I did was my mom just looked at me and said, "I don't know what to do with you." But for me, that was like, it was in turmoil from that moment. It was like all those things, the things I could have done. There was always another problem. There was another, somebody else's fault. It was never mine, never. And I mean, even when I probably should have used the devil idea a lot more. I might have got away with more. But it was a one-time thing. I knew it was just like a one-time get out of jail free card. But I tell you, because I'm looking for those, can I get out of jail free this time? All right. But I shockingly treated my family, my mother especially, and these people in my life with disdain and disgust and and unworthiness to be in my life when they were doing nothing but caring, loving, and trying to give me the best that they possibly could.
Thank you. All right, we're on page 83. Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone.
Long period of reconstruction. Long. I was somebody that I'm so instant gratification. I want things fixed. Like, when I decide they should be better, they're just better, right? You know, and I've seen that in myself. I've seen that in so many alcoholics I've had the opportunity to work with, or alcoholics in the lives of other alcoholics I've had the opportunity to work with. And, you know, the thing that jumped out at me tonight was that little sentence right after that. We must take the lead. And, you know, a lot of the relationships in my life from when I was drinking, and the ones I continue to struggle with today, are ones where, you know, based in, like, my assumption of how society works and, like, relationships, like, I shouldn't have to take the lead, you know? Like, I'm the daughter or the granddaughter or, you know, the niece or whatever. Like, really the daughter. I mean, I have struggled. You know, my mother and I are both members of this program, and we are way too much alike for our own good. I love her. God, I love her. But I have a lot of judgment. I have a lot of judgment. And that bit about, you know, their defects may be glaring, but chances are, maybe, just a little bit, my own actions have been partly responsible. And my own actions were almost entirely responsible when I got sober. Like, you know, I was like, oh, I grew up in this really violent alcoholic home, and my sponsor pointed out that my house became violent when I started being violent. Things like that. You know, and I love here that, like, just like when we talk in the fourth step about the manifestations of self and the issues that we have with, like, resentments, fear, and sex, and there's a prayer for each one of those, it's like, this is, like, a special thing that's really hard, so here's a prayer on, like, maybe how to do that on a daily basis, asking God to, or our Creator, to show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. And that reminds me a lot of the sick man prayer, because I use those things in conjunction when it comes to my family. But I have to take the lead, whether I should have to or not. You know, it's not about them. It's not about where they're at and what they're doing. And I've seen that, you know, I didn't get that so much when I first got sober, but, you know, I've seen it a lot lately, in particular with the changing dynamics of my family and the loss of my grandfather, as everyone's trying to adjust and figure stuff out. And I've got a lot of opinions about a lot of things and how people are behaving and what, you know, how they're looking at other people in the family and talking about them. And I'm just like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, grow up, you know? But I don't get to, like, I have found over and over again, my words do almost nothing when it comes to my family relations. What matters are my actions. Like, my behavior convinces people more than anything else. And, you know, at first my behavior was, I can stay sober and be better. And that was crucially important. Now it's, I have to set the example. You know, if I think that someone deserves compassion or tolerance or patience, which is something that has come up a lot lately, and there are people in my family that don't agree with me, they can have their opinions, but if I think that's the right thing, I need to lead by example. And that can be really hard for me. But, you know, the stuff in italics is really important. Like, the spiritual life is not a theory. I have to live it. I have to. I don't get the luxury of sitting on my spiritual hilltop and telling everybody else what's wrong with them, because what happens is I shut myself off from the sunlight of the spirit, and my life gets bad. And I've gotten to see that in some people who I really care about recently, where they've allowed some justified resentments in, and I'm like, whoa, it's like drinking. You don't get to control the consequences of that. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, but like, thank God I'm not doing that right now. You know, that I get to watch that and be like, wow, that looks really painful. I don't think I want to do that. You know, I get to learn from people's good examples and their bad examples. And then I get to be the example of what I think is right. And, you know, I have an ability to do that today because of this program. And if I'm not sure what the right answer is, there are a lot of alcoholics in my life who will tell me if I ask. So, thanks.
Thank you, Katie. So, I don't like that it says we must take the lead. I don't like that. And then I don't like it says we have to live it. That's just ridiculous. I don't want to take the lead in anything. I want to cheat. I just want to cheat. I don't want to do the work. But I remember here, again, I just use my grandmother a lot for this example, just because our relationship is really... Today is an example of what this program has given me by just taking the lead and trying to live it every day. So my sponsor told me one time, you know, to like show up. I was like, God dang it. You know? So I showed, you know, I don't want to show up. So I started showing up to this kind, loving woman, and I started, you know, and I made mistakes along the way because I'm not perfect. Because, you know, I make a little promise and then I break it. You know, I didn't make it. And then I didn't like the way I felt about it. So I had to make that, you know what I mean? I try to make it right. And then, we started having conversations. We started having conversations about God. Simply because she thought one way because of her religion. And I just made a simple AA statement about God. Do you believe that God is loving, tolerant, kind, and all-forgiving, and all-powerful? And she said, yes. And I said, me too. And do you think you'll be loving, tolerant, and kind, and all-forgiving to me? And she said, I do. And from that moment, we've been good. You know, our God thing and what I do and who I am. And then I started hearing these great moments with my mom. She said something to me because there was a situation with my sister, and she gave me instructions like, this is what I think you should do, and you should do it before you should do it in this order. And I of course Iran had his own agenda, and then I said, no, I heard you wanted me to do this way and this way and this way, so I'll do it this way. And I heard the did you just take my advice after all these years? Like I heard it like that, like did, and so I did what she said and suggested, like I would do if someone in Alcoholics Anonymous would give me a suggestion, and it worked. And I thanked her for the suggestion, and then she called me just a couple of days ago, and she said, so can you come over? Because we're exchanging records. She has all of my records from when I was a kid. And so I grabbed all the records and we're exchanging, like going through these records because we both got turntables again. And so, and she said, when are you coming back over? I need to get some more records. And I said, well, I don't want to set a date or time right now because I don't want to promise that I'm going to come over and not make it. And she went, and I was, and I didn't mean for her to, you know, it wasn't my, it was just like, what you've taught me, this, I learned those responses from you, like, don't do something that if I don't know if I can do it, you know, make sure if you can, you say you're going to show up, then you show up, but for her, I can see the difference in there, just the home, it's like, she's watching the change as I'm watching the change, and I can only see the change because of a simple, but that looks like trust to me today. And she calls me more often, and I didn't call her for 1 week, and she called me because I hadn't heard from you for a week. I know that you've been busy, I know you're working, but I just hadn't heard from you. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. And so our relationship is absolutely full of joy and happiness, and it's not because of anything I've done. Because I am too, I would be the tornado. I would have ignored her, I would have said, thanks for letting me stay with you for 2 years without paying a dime, and I'm out. You know what I mean? Like, and kept on going. But our relationship is a real relationship based on the actions that I've been taught here in Alcoholics Anonymous, by responding the way I'm supposed to respond, living the way I'm supposed to live. So, and then I just want to say this, I know we're running short. I love this line, it says, very careful not to criticize them. Hmm. First of all, did you see what they were wearing? My mind automatically, I'm a criticizing little person. And so that has been a very, 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 very hard thing for me to work on. And that's what I, until this simple line that someone gave me and reminded me about, is like, it's not mine to be worked on. Mm. I'm supposed to turn it over to the Father. Mm. So that he can have all of me, the good and the bad. And so I discovered that some of those things that I, in these instructions, I have to go back a few steps to remind myself it's not my job. Mm. Thanks.
Thank you. So we've got 9 minutes. We'll read another paragraph. Page 83. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can't honestly say to ourselves that we would write them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases. But we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble, without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone.
Yeah. You know, this paragraph to me is just sponsorship. Like, how and when and why to make amends and what that looks like. I didn't make any of those decisions alone. I went to my sponsor. I talked to her about it, and she gave me direction. And, you know, usually what I was thinking was wrong. Like, I'm going to go get really dressed up in a new outfit and make amends to my ex-boyfriend. She was like, no. You're not. You're going to pick up the phone. Because in my mind, I'm like, maybe it'll go so well, we'll get back together. So, you know, and there are people that were on my first list that I haven't made amends to because I can't find them, or I reached out and they didn't respond, but I remain willing. And I wasn't immediately willing when I started making the amends. There were people I was not willing to make amends to, and I didn't have to start with them. You know, and as I found, as I went through the amends process with my sponsor, that willingness came. You know, and I like that last part about, you know, as God's people, we stand on our feet, we don't crawl before anyone. But there's a qualifier that comes before that, which is, I need to be sensible, I need to be tactful, which is like respectful, considerate, and humble. And then, if I can do all those things, I do not have to be servile or scraping. I get to stand on my own feet, and I don't have to crawl before anybody. But, you know, I don't get to grandstand. I don't get to go in and justify or argue or criticize. Like, I am there to make it right. And, you know, I had people. I had that ex-boyfriend told me that I could make it right by paying off his car. And I was like, I don't think that's how it works. So let me talk to my sponsor. You know, and that wasn't, you know, I didn't have to do that. All I had to do was clean up my side of the street and squarely own the things that I had done. And so, yes, I get to stand on my feet. I'm not crawling today, but it's because I'm sensibly, tactfully treating people with consideration and humility. So, thank you.
Ditto.
That's it?
That's it. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah. We're going to read one more paragraph. Page 83. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. Mm. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises?
We think not.
They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
I love the promises. We kind of conspired up here to move through the last paragraph so we could get to the promises. Iran did a better job of that than I did.
Ditto.
You know, and I heard these in meetings when I got sober, and they didn't believe you. I didn't believe you. My life was so far away from the things that that paragraph describes that I didn't have any concept of what that would look like. To not regret the past or wish to shut the door on it, you don't know about my past. You know, like, that was never going to happen for me. In fact, I had stuff from my past that I was 100% sure when I walked in the doors that AA couldn't fix. And I stayed sober for years with, you know, pain and, you know, a lot of difficulty around those experiences. And I eventually, you know, it became abundantly clear to me, you know, more will be revealed. When it was time for me to deal with that stuff, I dealt with it and I got outside help. And I'm here to tell you that had I not stayed sober through this program long enough for that to happen, I would still be a slave to those experiences today. And today, I mean, it was the single largest burning bush spiritual experience I had when those were removed at 5 years sober. The pain was gone in an instant because of the work that I had been doing and, you know, my solid foundation here in Alcoholics Anonymous. These are all amazing promises. They have all come true in my life. As I read them now, I can clearly think of experiences after, you know, one after another that demonstrate that. But the one that always hits me, and it's so easy to skip over, is at the top of 84, we will know peace. Because that's what I wanted. That's always what I wanted, was to feel at peace. And I could never find it. And, you know, I have it today. I have it. I'm not useless. I'm not full of self-pity. My entire life is different. It doesn't mean I don't struggle and have problems, but I am being taken care of every day, and I can see that. And whether I feel it or not, you know, I am sitting here. I'm reasonably well-fed, reasonably well-rested. I have a place to go home to. I have a job. Like, I am okay. And if I'm okay in this moment, everything that has happened up until right now, I have been taken care of, regardless of whether it felt like it at the time. So thanks. And if we work for them.
God. So, because I'm sitting up here crying, because I was sitting here, like, the word serenity, we will know the words. I remember the first time I found out what serenity was. I called my sponsor, and I was like, something's weird. I'm not bad. I'm like, nothing's wrong, but nothing's happening. I don't, what? Because sounds like serenity to me. I was like, well, like, serenity feels like this. And then the simple statement is, you've probably never had it before, so you might not know what it feels like. He's usually right, so thank you. But I remember serenity and then peace, and I love, no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. I remember the first time someone, I was working with another alcoholic, and they said something, and an experience from my past was helpful. That being a homeless bum who pissed himself, that once he started, he could not stop, a mind that would constantly keep him strong, who ended up in weird places, could actually help someone. I could not believe it. I remember that feeling of uselessness and self-pity would disappear. I remember exactly when it happened. Okay, I'm sorry. I remember exactly when I realized I hadn't thought about myself in a while. Because I don't know when it happened. I just remember going, hey, I haven't thought about myself. I'm not full of self-pity. You know what? I'm not trying to fix my hole. I don't know what that's about. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. You know, my outlook of how life, I love it. It talks about the spiritual appendix in the back of the book. It talks about my reaction to life will change. And that's, I remember one moment when my whole outlook had changed. I walked into a 7-Eleven, this lady was behind the counter. She said, "When are you due?" And I said, "Huh? Who's she talking to?" And she said, "When are you due? Your stomach's bigger than mine." And I was like, that son of a that lady. Now my response in my head should have been, I should have picked up the cash register, broken it, thrown a few things, cussed her out, pulled her by her hair, and beat her down. That's my response. My response was, "Can I just have a pack of cigarettes? Thank you. Have a good day." That's not me. That is not me. And we will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. And then we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. You know, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, there's three things I knew. I knew that I had a problem, but I knew that you guys might have a solution, and I did not know anything else. I was sure of those three things. Today, you guys have given me a life, freedom from the bondage of self. The truth about myself, you guys have given me the truth about myself. And you've given me an ability to laugh. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I could not laugh anymore. Today, I have freedom and I can hear joy. And I just would like to say, if you're new, please find someone who's properly armed with the facts about themselves, which means they know that once they start, they cannot stop. They have a mind that will constantly get them drunk, who's willing to take you the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I have found to be in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, one step at a time. Thank you.
Let's thank our panel. All right, that was wonderful. We're going to pass the seventh tradition basket. Here are my helpers. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. I have one announcement, and then I'll ask y'all if you have any. This group is going to have their Supper and a Speaker on April the 3rd, after we finish Step 12 the week prior. And we have a speaker coming from Charlotte, North Carolina, that some of us know, Evan C.
Oh, yeah.
So bring a dish and come join us for that. Any other announcements out there? Lovely. All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. And newcomers, the most important people in the room. Is there anyone here that is in their first 30 days of sobriety that would like to introduce themselves by their first name just so we can get to know you? Any newcomers?
Oh, yes, we do.
Yes.
Hey, Matt.
Welcome.
Newcomer.
All right. We have some literature over here on the table. The books are for sale. The pamphlets are free. If you want to buy a book, just see me after the meeting. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay.
Yes.
If you have questions or would like any additional information about sponsorship, I'll be up here, as well as Katie and Iran. That anyone interested in having any questions about sponsorship or needing to find one, we'll be glad to help you out. And please feel free to talk to and thank Katie and Iran after the meeting for their share. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. And I think there's other groups here tonight, so stay over there by the bike rack if you're smoking. And let's see, there's a butt can out there that someone will take care of. It's a magic thing.
Thank you. I needed a laugh.
Okay. We're going to thank the panel again. And I'd like to thank everyone for getting close together tonight. We have a little smaller area tonight, but thanks for everybody for coming and for all who participated. Once we clean up and clean up the coffee and everything, we're going to go down to Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Colonial, and we invite all and encourage you to continue the conversation on these steps at the meeting after the meeting.
Sounds good.
Who would like to read? Look at that, Brad.
Hi, Brad.
Hi, Brad. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us if you trust the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Amen.
All right, we close with the Lord's Prayer.
Join us.
Yes.
Give me some of that.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Keep going.
Keep going.
Oh, I love you. Oh my God.